Slinkyhead.
I'm not letting you go to work today.
Wait, what?
Everybody, listen up.
Welcome to The Drive.
Morning, morning, morning.
You're going to talk.
Get on the phone at 339-1140.
Pretty awesome, huh?
Jump in on our text line at 44-1140.
Everyone is talking about it. You must know that.
The Drive starts now.
I want to thank Grant Napier for joining us last segment on the Fire Wings Hotline. 21 delicious flavors to choose one. Firewings.com to find the location nearest you. Fire Wings, just wing it. Matt Barrows of The Athletic coming up next to discuss the 2-8 49ers as they head into their bye week. Tough game for them last night. Want to remind everybody as well that this Thursday, drop off fresh or frozen turkeys to the Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services and help make sure thousands of families in need are able to enjoy a holiday meal this Thanksgiving. The 1140 Street Team will be helping collect donations from noon to 5 p.m. at 3333 3rd Avenue in Sacramento. Details at khtk.com. Before we get to Matt, I want to jump over and talk to Mitch. Mitch has been waiting on hold. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, good morning, guys. Long time, long talk.
Yeah, how you been?
I'm doing pretty good.
Excellent.
Oh, great. Happy holiday. You know, it's a little early, but be right.
What do you want to say?
Hey, I have a little tough time distinguishing your two voices, but I think you've heard that one before. But
we have.
first with the Niners, good going with the loss. I think the Raiders and Niners are going to be picking Nick Bosa and Ed Oliver. Those will be the top two picks. Giants, they're going to be looking at Mullins. And maybe the 49ers can squeeze a second or third round pick. Oh.
Mitch, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought I was talking to you guys.
No, you cut out there for a moment. We got to run, though. He thinks the Niners are going to try and trade Nick Mullins for a second and third round pick. That's probably a little ambitious at this point. But Matt Barrows of The Athletic is joining us now on the Fire Wings guest line. Matt, our caller Mitch thinks the Niners should try and trade Nick Mullins for a second and third round pick, and I got to tell you, I couldn't agree more.
I'm going to try and date Jessica Alba in the coming months. So, you know, we both have ambitious plans, but I think we can pull it off.
Matt, thanks so much for joining me today. Once again, no Dave, but you're still taking time out of your day to hop on and talk 49ers with us, and I certainly appreciate it. Last night was a rough one, and just kind of the same story for the 49ers, it seems. Just that inability to close games.
Yeah, for sure. You know, again, they were leading by 10 points at one point in the third quarter, and then the game was tied, and then they recaptured the lead. And I don't know if there were very many people in the stadium that thought, even after they had gotten that three-point lead, that this was a team that was going to be able to close the deal. You know, they just had not been able to put any semblance of pressure on Eli Manning throughout the game. And Manning has good weapons. He's got Odell Beckham at one wide receiver. He's got Saquon Barkley at running back. He's got Evan Ingram at tight end. And he used all three of them on that final drive. No completions to Barkley, Beckham, but a long pass interference call. And if you don't have any sort of answer, the 49ers don't have a closer, a star on defense, somebody who can put away a game. And, you know, that's exactly what we saw. I don't think there's anybody, certainly in the press box, that didn't think that the Giants were just going to march down in the last 2 minutes and change and either tie the game or come up with a game-winning touchdown. And that's exactly what happened.
What do you attribute the Niners' inability to close games, especially on defense? Because I see a lot of people on Twitter, I follow a lot of 49ers fans, who seem to be placing the blame on Robert Saleh. But for me, at least, watching, it just seems like they don't have enough good, healthy players.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, there was a busted coverage in the third quarter on that Beckham touchdown where he just ran right past Akello Witherspoon. Witherspoon thought that there was going to be a safety back there. There wasn't. So I don't know if that's coaching-related, Saleh-related. Just after that play, Richard Sherman was seen on the sideline yelling at the defensive backs coach, Jeff Hafley. So I think there's probably some smoke there, but you're right. I mean, to me, it's just what we've been talking about all season. I mean, look at what Khalil Mack did the other day for the Bears. I mean, a couple of sacks at key points in the game. 49ers don't have that guy. They don't have the guy that's going to kind of take the game into his hands and make sure on 3rd and 20 or whatever it is that the opposition doesn't get a first down. And it's been the story of the season. I mean, the one game where it all clicked against the Raiders, that was a mirage. I mean, that was the outlier right. of these games. The rest of it is they just cannot get to the quarterback, especially at key moments. And that quarterback is a nice, comfy pocket from which to make plays. And we saw that again last night.
Matt, in a desperate way to, or in a desperate attempt to try and find a silver lining from a frustrating loss like last night, given the circumstances that this team has dealt with this year, the injuries, the plethora of injuries to their star Jimmy Garoppolo and many others, is there any positive that can be pulled for fans and then from the organization themselves on the fact that despite the fact that they don't have a closer or two to help them win these games, they are still, as young as they are, dealing with these injuries, are able to put themselves in positions to at least have a chance to win?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that the biggest takeaway when this season is over was that is going to be that the 49ers are able to run the ball, and they're able to run the ball whether you know, it's Matt Breida in there, whether it's Raheem Mostert. They do seem to slow down a bit when it's Alfred Morris. But this is a good – that's what kept them in this game. The other side had Eli Manning, a two-time Super Bowl MVP. It had Barkley. It had Beckham. It had Ingram. It had stars. The 49ers didn't really have a lot of offensive weapon stars, but they had a very good line. And that's what kept them in sort of a blow-for-blow game throughout most of it. So I think that's going to be a big deal moving on. You would expect the 49ers, with all the salary cap space that they have and with a good draft pick coming up, to add some of those bells and whistles that they don't have right now, that they're missing to kind of close out these games. But the structure, the foundation of this team, really both lines, is pretty good. And when you've got that foundation, you ostensibly are able to kind of build those pieces off of it that are missing. And that seems to be a silver lining, a good takeaway for this team heading into the 2019 offseason.
Matt Breida has developed pretty nicely as a pass catcher, and we saw that last night with his touchdown catch on a kind of a little bit of an acrobatic play from the running back. Are the 49ers viewing him as a really nice complement to Jerick McKinnon, or is his emergence making Jerick McKinnon less relevant for them, or less of a necessity, I guess?
Yeah, less of a necessity, I put it. I mean, I've been watching because this guy happens to be on my fantasy football team, and that's the most important thing in my life right now, Dalvin Cook quite a bit. And Dalvin Cook suffered an ACL injury early last season, and he ostensibly was fully healed by the time that training camp began, which is the same timeline that McKinnon's on. But he's dealt with all sorts of other issues, mostly hamstring injuries. And hey, you could totally see that scenario happening for McKinnon. You try to push it a little bit too hard, you strain your hamstring, then you deal with a hamstring strain for the first half of the season. My point is that when a guy is coming off of an ACL, especially a running back, you just can't plug him into the offense and think, oh, he's going to be as good as new. It usually takes a couple of years for the guy to be back, which would put Breida into a much bigger role, much bigger situation next year than maybe a lot of people think. And he's showing this year that he can handle it. And yeah, I think the pass catching element is a big part. It's something he didn't do a lot at Georgia Southern. But he's obviously got the speed and the hands. He just needs to put it all together. And he's showing incrementally, game by game, that he can be a real asset in that facet of the game.
Somebody that I was watching last night, you mentioned the pass interference against Odell Beckham Jr. on that last drive. It was flagged on Akello Witherspoon. And Witherspoon gave up a touchdown earlier in the game where he threw his hands up, and Kyle Shanahan and Richard Sherman were both reacted pretty negatively to that action by Witherspoon. Where is Akello at in terms of his future with the 49ers? Is he still somebody they see as a foundational piece on the outside, or is he kind of losing his grip on that spot of the future?
It's been a bit of two steps forward, one step back for him. The last three games that he played in, he played really well. This one was not as good, although, you know, for as much as we were watching Beckham and called his name last night, he only had four catches. You know, two of them happened to be touchdowns. They had the big pass interference call on that final drive. And then there was a play in the third quarter where he was wide open on a deep pass, and Manning just underthrew him dramatically, and it was incomplete. And, you know, on that play, you saw Witherspoon sort of celebrate like he was the reason why the pass was incomplete, even though he was beaten soundly. I think the 49ers would love to see him, you know, sort of do away with the theatrics and just play. Like I said, it's been mostly good in the last month for him, despite the fact that teams are still staying away from Richard Sherman. You know, this is going to sound wishy-washy, but these last six games will really, you know, answer the question for us. They want to see him on the same trajectory he was on at the end of last season. And like I said, it's been up and down for him this year. If it's still going up, he's just got all these physical gifts that they really love. Wonderful footwork, wonderful speed, great size. It's just putting it all together for him. And like I said, it's been spotty so far in 2018.
Matt, class act by the Raiders organization last night, inviting the football team from Paradise High School. Of course, Paradise affected by the tragic fires that are happening. Paradise High School forfeited their high school playoff football game because pretty much everything except for the high school itself is burning up there, and due to the conditions, obviously not able to play that. But the organization, the 49ers, doing a phenomenal job inviting the team to the game, giving them the royal treatment. I know I saw photos and videos of John Lynch speaking to them beforehand. Did you get the opportunity to interact with any of them at all, players, coaches, and what was that like from your perspective for that team?
I did not. My colleague David Lombardi did before the game, and he wrote something on The Athletic that your listeners can read. And from all accounts of it, it was a very emotional event. I mean, these are a bunch of young men, teenagers who are going through all the things that teenagers go through, and they don't have homes anymore. Their entire town pretty much was wiped away by these fires, and they're a football team. They had to forfeit their playoff game, and here they are on Monday Night Football on the sideline, a lot of them talking to the guys they probably consider idols and heroes and whatnot. So you can only imagine the emotion, the roller coaster that these young men have been on. So, a great job by the 49ers to organize that, by the Paradise coaches to get it done as well. So, it also makes you, we're all worried about the wins and losses and whether Akello Witherspoon was, in the right coverage or not. But, there's a lot bigger things going on, and that was happening on the sideline of Monday's game.
Yeah, Matt, as we speak with Matt Barrows of The Athletic, you mentioned you can read that at The Athletic, theathletic.com. I'm a subscriber. Matt George across the glass, he is also a subscriber. You guys do a lot of great work over there, and we certainly appreciate that. You wrote about George Kittle in your five observations piece last night, and mentioned that Kittle had only 17 yards after halftime. Did the Giants specifically find a way to cover Kittle, or was it something the 49ers were doing wrong and not being able to get him the ball?
No, the Giants definitely adjusted. They had put him in single coverage throughout the first half, and he made them pay for that to the tune of something like 68 yards. And after halftime, they essentially double-teamed him. They brought in a cornerback and a safety on George Kittle, which is, the 49ers should have had and an ancillary move after that. When you commit two players to one guy, a tight end, somebody else should be popping open, and that was the issue. There was nobody else that sort of took over for the 49ers, took the place of George Kittle as the go-to guy in that second half. And, you know, luckily Matt Breida really stepped forward on that final scoring drive for the 49ers, because other than that, they really didn't have an answer. And that's you know, another missing element, I think. The 49ers have a good running game. They've got a great tight end. They don't have a consistent wide receiver who steps forward every game. Marquise Goodwin had a good game. He was in and out of the lineup with a head injury. Kendrick Bourne, who was substituting for Pierre Garçon, had a good game, certainly, but not a prolific one. They need somebody to step up and be the hero at the end. They certainly haven't been getting that from that wide receiver spot, and that's got to be one that they look at in the offseason.
Yeah, that was actually going to be my next question. Did last night kind of underscore the importance of needing that big-time playmaker on the outside? Because, I mean, Dante Pettis has not really lived up to his second-round billing so far. Then you've got Kendrick Bourne or Marquise Goodwin. I know those are all fine players, but I think they need that number one kind of go-to threat on the outside.
Yeah, you're right, for sure. Pettis played 41 snaps. That's a lot of snaps. And his box score, his stat mark, didn't reflect a guy that played that many snaps. They haven't been getting very much out of him. He mostly played out of the slot last night, and that meant that Trent Taylor, Richie James, guys that have delivered in previous weeks and previous years, were mostly on the sideline. So Pettis took all of those snaps and really didn't have much to show for it at the end of the game. So they certainly need more from him. Several guys that were selected around the spot that Pettis was in the second round on other teams have been delivering this year. Christian Kirk in Arizona was one. He seems to deliver the most when he plays the 49ers, but Pettis, injured for a lot of the season, just has not been giving them the quality snaps that they need. So, yeah, I agree with you. They need to bring in somebody. I don't know if Pierre Garçon is going to be here next year. Like you said, Kendrick Bourne's been doing a nice job, but they really need somebody, a big-time receiver, a big-bodied receiver. I don't even know if that person is going to be available, but there's just a missing element at that position that it just seems clear at the end of these games, especially these losses, that the 49ers are missing.
I'm going to jump back over to the other side of the football here. I know I keep switching up on you, but Malcolm Smith seemed to struggle a little bit in coverage last night. Is that something that the 49ers knew when they brought him in, or has he kind of been as disappointing to them as he's looked?
He played all the snaps last night, whereas the last two games he had been alternating with Elijah Lee, and apparently that was related to some injury that Smith was dealing with, and didn't land him on the injury report, but that was the take that the 49ers gave us, the impression that they gave us last week when we asked about it. So I don't know if he's fully healthy or what, but it was very apparent last night that he couldn't keep up with Evan Ingram at tight end, and he couldn't keep up with Saquon Barkley when they sent the running back out and on a pass play as well. He had a very bad game, especially at the end. You know, this is going to be a nice rest period for Reuben Foster. You would think that when it's finally time to play the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in Week 12, he'll be ready, and that would send Malcolm Smith to the bench, which is a shame because he's been waiting for his time to shine. He's been playing the position, weak side linebacker, that they had earmarked for him. He just didn't play it very well last night. He didn't play well. I didn't think that Mark Nazacha, the strong side linebacker, played well. And, you know, that allowed the Giants to kind of stay in the game early and then take the lead at the end.
How healthy do you think the 49ers look coming out of the bye week?
They should be very healthy. I mean, Jaquaski Tartt, Reuben Foster, Pierre Garçon were the notable guys who missed this game. I think the thinking with all three of them was that, hey, if we can get them through this game that gives them, you know, a long period, I think it was 25 days without a game, that should be enough to, you know, take some of these pesky injuries that they've been dealing with and get them as close to fully healthy as possible. So I imagine that they'll feel good for that that late November game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and hopefully finish out the season with some momentum injury-wise.
Talking with Matt Barrows of The Athletic here on Sports 1140 KHTK. How's the fantasy team doing this year?
We're hanging on by a thread. We score a lot of points. We just get to, we get a little unlucky each week.
Oh,
so
brutal.
You have to deal with that. It's serendipity a lot of times in in the fantasy world. I don't have a lot of that.
I found that hanging on by a thread is just my perpetual fantasy life.
Like, maybe you should change your team name to By a Thread.
That's really good. Maybe I can find a good football player name pun to roll off of that. Well, very good. Hey, Matt, thanks so much for joining us as the 49ers head into their bye week 2-8. I was looking at their schedule, and going into this is Giants game, I was thinking, you know, they beat the Giants, they get the bye week, they have a winnable game against Tampa Bay, possibly a winnable game against Denver. Now it really looks like there's just not any winnable games left on their schedule.
No, everything has to go right for this team to win, and unfortunately, they just do a lot of wrong things during a game. I mean, that's been the theme all season, and they were back onto that theme last night. It looks like that Raiders game was very Raiders-related and was an aberration.
Well, very good, Matt. Thanks so much. You can find Matt Barrows at The Athletic, theathletic.com. Go there and subscribe. Matt, enjoy the bye week, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Talk to you guys soon.
Thanks, man. That's Matt Barrows talking about the 2-8 49ers. They fell to the Giants last night, 27-23. And that's been a theme with Matt all year, is when it comes to the 49ers, much like the Raiders, it's just that at some point in the NFL, you have to have good players. And neither Bay Area team has good enough players to win games.
Well, the Raiders had good players. They just gave them away for nothing. Because John Gruden's a moron.
It's a fine point. But the Niners, due to injuries and just due to general lack of talent, just don't have, like, it's not a coincidence that they've blown so many fourth quarter leads and that they make so many mistakes with turnovers and blown coverages. Like, this comes down to talent at the end of the day. And I know they're on their third quarterback and they're on running backs number 4 and 5 and their secondary's all banged up, but man, it's tough because it's 17 weeks of this.
Yep.
And the 49ers mercifully get a bye week, as Matt alluded to. They'll be healthier coming out of the bye week, and they have a couple of games left that in theory they could win, but it's hard to have a lot of confidence that they will win any of those. We got to get to the break. When we get back, we're going to talk to Danny Kelly from The Ringer. Danny, one of the hosts of the Dantasy Football Podcast. He hosts it with Danny Heifetz. I want to chat with him about some waiver wire pickups and possible trades and just gearing your fantasy team up for the playoff run. Danny Kelly of The Ringer to talk fantasy football. He's coming up next on the Fire Wings Hotline. This is The Drive. He's Matt George. I'm Kyle Madsen. It's Sports 1140 KHTK.
Here we go. The Drive continues now.
Welcome back into The Drive on Sports 1140. Kyle Madsen and Matt George filling in for Carmichael Dave, is out handling a family issue. Hopefully he will be back tomorrow. Going to speak with Danny Kelly of The Ringer on the Fire Wings guest line. Fire Wings. Try one of their delicious 21 flavors of wings today. Find the location nearest you at firewings.com. Fire Wings. Hey, just wing it. Hugh Jackson, if you hadn't heard, is employed once again in the NFL. He was hired as a special assistant to the head coach, not an assistant head coach, an assistant to the head coach by Marvin Lewis in Cincinnati. So things have come full circle for Hugh Jackson. And given the ineptitude of the Bengals franchise
And the fact that they could have gotten out from under Marvin Lewis this offseason and re-signed him, I have a very, very hard time believing that this road with Hugh Jackson as the special assistant to the head coach doesn't end with Hugh Jackson being the head coach in Cincinnati within the next couple of years. It really, really feels that way. And that would just be a perfect, all-time great Cincinnati thing to do. Cincinnati, a franchise that's inept, but not as inept as I am as a fantasy football coach. And to chat with us today about fantasy football is one of the hosts of the Fantasy Football Podcast on the Ringer Podcast Network. It's Danny Kelly. Danny, thanks so much for taking some time. We've been trying to get you on for a couple weeks, but I know you're a busy guy. Glad you're able to carve out a few minutes today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on today.
Yeah, of course. I actually listened to the latest Fantasy Football Podcast on the way into work today, and I've got a few questions about some of the stuff you guys talked about. An interesting thing that is not a thing I'd ever really considered before is is you guys talked about with Craig the idea of getting rid of the players on the back end of your roster who don't really play, that you maybe drafted in the eighth, ninth round as like bye week fill-ins, dropping those guys in favor of handcuffs for some of your starters or for some of the league's elite players. Can you elaborate on why you may do that?
Yeah, so basically, I mean, as you get into the fantasy football playoffs, I mean, you're going to be rolling with your studs, the guys that are carrying your team all year. It doesn't really matter to have quite as much to have a deep bench at that point, I think, just like guys that have been sitting on your bench for the most part. You're not necessarily super confident to start them. It's probably better at this point to try and grab a few really, really high upside handcuffs that could really help you if your guys get injured. So, for instance, like Dallas Goedert, if you have Zach Ertz and he somehow got hurt, I think, you know, he's one of the most volume heavy tight ends in the NFL. I mean, we saw last week he just went off. I think he had like 40 points in PPR. So grabbing a guy like Goddard, if Zach Ertz got hurt, would be huge. Austin Eckler with Melvin Gordon. Malcolm Brown right now, if you have Todd Gurley and he's basically carried you your entire season, if Gurley were to get hurt, if they were to sit him late in the season for whatever reason, resting obviously would, you know, he's not going to get benched. But having a guy like that who can get that type of volume in those offenses is huge.
A couple of guys I was looking at on one of the waiver wires in my league are Corey Davis and Derrick Henry. Two guys, Titans offense has put up, I think, 64 points the last 2 weeks. Is that something where you think they've figured it out and those guys are worth picking up to start down the stretch?
I definitely think Corey Davis is a guy to grab. I mean, he's been sort of a sleeper all season. He's been getting a ton of targets and things like that, but the offense there has not clicked for whatever reason. You know, maybe it has something to do with the fact that Marcus Mariota couldn't feel his hand, which I think is probably important. So it feels like that offense is kind of coming back to life. Corey Davis has been a leader, you know, in air yards all year, so he's getting tons of targets downfield. And I think he has that breakout potential going forward. I'm not quite as confident about Derrick Henry. I think he's kind of the type of running back who is very game script dependent. In that sense, if they get a lead early and they want to grind out the game, kind of like we saw against the Patriots last week, then he's going to get a ton of carries and potentially have a touchdown or two. But I don't know, because it just depends on how confident you are in the Titans' ability to do that. If they're going to be playing from behind a lot, he might not have a huge role in the offense in that given game. So to me, he's kind of a boom or bust guy. But if you think that they're going to get out to a big early lead and then grind the game out with their run game, then he is definitely an option to have on your bench.
Got a question coming in as we talk to Danny Kelly of The Ringer, one of the hosts of the Fantasy Football Podcast. Somebody on our text line, the Jiffy Lube text line, says they need a third wide receiver still. Do they keep John Brown and Christian Kirk, or do they pick up one of Godwin, QT, or Anthony Miller?
Oh, man, that's tough. I mean, obviously, I like John Brown a lot. The Ravens offense going forward is a huge, huge question mark, though. I mean, if you got Lamar Jackson coming in and starting at quarterback, that could really kind of throw off what they were doing earlier in the season. Flacco had a really good rapport with John Brown, and that's has kind of fallen off over the last few weeks. I'm not as excited about Brown going forward as I used to be. He has been, again, a leader in the air yards department. He's one of the top guys in the air yards category this year, but his production's definitely fallen off over the last few weeks. I do like Miller. I think he was, again, a great college player, put up a ton of production, very dynamic, can play all over the field. It seems like the Bears offense is picking up over the last few weeks. I like him going forward. I'm a big fan of Kiki Kuti. I think, especially with Will Fuller out for the rest of the season, I think he's going to inherit a lot of volume in that offense. He's been hurt with a hamstring injury, so we don't really know exactly when he's set to return. It sounds like he's questionable for this week and kind of go forward and see what happens. But down the stretch, I really like Kuti. I mean, when he came in his first game in the league, he had, I think, 15 targets, 11 catches. And that was a game that Will Fuller left. Now, obviously, having Demaryius Thomas in that offense is going to, you know, kind of affect whether or not he can get that volume. But I don't think it necessarily I don't think Thomas is necessarily going to steal a lot of those targets. I think in the slot, over the middle, kind of those running, like dump off and run type plays, I think Kuti is going to dominate those. If you're in a PPR league, he's a guy that I would definitely target.
Got another question coming in on the Jiffy Lube text line here. They said they're asking if they should sell high on Nick Chubb in a dynasty league. He was offered Tyreek Hill for Chubb and Sammy Watkins. He also has Jordan Howard, Sony Michel, Dalvin Cook, and Aaron Jones.
Oh, man. That's tough because I really, really like Chubb. I mean, in terms of dynasty, I guess it depends on how long you're thinking ahead. Obviously, running backs don't have quite as long of a shelf life as receivers do because they just get more beat up, you know, over time. But I think Chubb is on pace to be one of the most dynamic electric running backs in the NFL. I mean, if he's not already, I personally probably would stick with him. I think that Browns offense is definitely picking up. He has the ability to be a bell cow. I mean, they're leaning on him for tons and tons of carries. He's one of the most explosive athletes in the NFL in terms of his ability to have breakaway speed. He's very, very athletic laterally. He's kind of got that. I mean, he's not Saquon Barkley, but he's got that Saquon Barkley ability to break tackles, you know, just with his agility in the small area. And so I don't know. I like Chubb a lot. I mean, I think it just depends on how long you're looking for it, I guess. If you're worried about the next, like, in 3 years from now, then I would make that trade. If you're worried about the next 2 years, though, I think Chubb is going to be a huge producer.
Is Tariq Cohen a must-start for you in PPR?
Oh, man.
That's from my text line. That's me asking.
He's just so dynamic in any given game. I think he could have just a huge, huge game. In a PPR, he's got that sort of high floor just because he's a big part of their, you know, passing game and all that. But then again, I mean, if you look at the Buffalo game, he just kind of had – he almost had a goose egg, 1.3
right.
points. So – I don't know. I looked at the last, let's see here, 6 or 7 weeks. He's put up really solid numbers. I wouldn't worry too much about that one goose egg game. He's just such a dynamic talent that I'd probably stick with him. And at this point, he's a must start for me.
I think that's my problem as a fantasy owner is one, a guy will have one bad game and I just get really mad and I just drop them.
It's so easy to overreact to those games. I feel you completely, but I mean, just look at what he's done in the other, you know, 5 or 6
right.
weeks in the last, you know. So I just think overall, you're going to have some stinkers from guys every once in a while, you know, but I wouldn't worry too much about it.
Somebody asked if they should be starting Larry Fitzgerald or Nelson Aguilar next week.
I lean Fitzgerald. I mean, Aguilar actually was a very good surprise this week, but I think that had a little bit to do with the fact that they were still easing Golden Tate in. Aguilar to me is kind of like, I guess Aguilar is sort of in the same vein as Tariq Cohen, I guess, in the sense that I just can't trust him week to week. You know, I'm just too worried that there's too many mouths to feed in that offense. On the other hand, the Cardinals offense is taking a kind of a turn under Byron Leftwich. They're starting to feature Larry Fitzgerald in a much more prominent role. They're feeding him. Like, he's a huge part of their offense now, which was a little bit different from the beginning of the year for whatever reason. Going up against Oakland's defense this week, too, is just a really juicy matchup. And so I like Fitzgerald this week. I think that the Cardinals' offense, for as bad as it's been all year, has started to really make him a focal point of the passing game. He's going to get targets, and you know he's got that high floor. He's a really good player. And again, that Oakland defense is just terrible.
All right, last thing for Danny Kelly of The Ringer, talking fantasy football with him. He's one of the hosts of the Dynasty Football podcast. Have the Raiders reached the point where you should just pick up the defense playing against them every week?
I think it's getting to be that point. I mean, their defense is just, I think it's almost on par with like a lot of the ones that I think people think about in terms of, you know, the must starts. You got like the Tampa Bay defense, you got Kansas City defense. Raiders are maybe worse at this point. Yeah. So yeah, that has a lot to do with it for me. I mean, I'm excited about what David Johnson and Lance Fitzgerald can do this week against them. I think just in general, they're a mess. It seems like they've almost given up on Gruden, which is always a really great sign in the first year of his tenure there. But yeah, I mean, their offense hasn't been, I think, as bad as people think it has. I mean, it's been bad, but I think a lot more of their struggles this year is coming down to just not being able to stop anybody. So yeah, the Raiders to me are a mess on defense. They're a fantasy target if you got guys going up against them.
Danny Kelly, you can find him at theringer.com and on the Dynasty Football Podcast with Danny Heifetz on the Ringer Podcast Network. I know you're a busy guy, so thanks for carving out a few minutes this morning and talking fantasy football with us here early in the week.
Absolutely, I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, buddy. That's Danny Kelly talking fantasy football, answering your fantasy football questions. Hopefully you got some good info as we ramp up for playoffs. I know playoffs start for most people week 13, 14. So just a couple of weeks left till those start. So get your teams tuned up. When we come back, what's on tap? I want to talk about this Warriors building pass as well that they are that they're putting out, and maybe dive in a little bit to Markelle Fultz and his pump fake free throw. And what the heck is going on with Markelle Fultz? Because that's such a strange story, and I don't think that we can talk about it enough. This is The Drive on Sports 1140 KSGK.
It's the end of the show, but it's the start of your workday. Pour a cold one. It's What's on Tap. Here's What's on Tap.
What is on tap? Brought to you by Optimism.
Yes.
Optimism. It's what's for breakfast.
Lunch and dinner.
The Kings are 8-6. They're off tonight. So what the heck is going on elsewhere in the NBA? Charlotte's at Cleveland. No thanks.
Yeah.
Houston's at Denver. That might be a fun one. Carmelo Anthony skipping that trip, so we might get the best version of the Rockets.
And Denver should smack them.
Yeah, they should. And then the Hawks are at Golden State. Golden State on the back end of a back-to-back. I'm making excuses already.
Really?
No.
I was going to say for a Hawks game?
Just stating a fact.
Beware Trae Young.
And then the Sharks are on tonight, and I believe we'll carry that game right here on Sports 1140. The Sharks are home against the Nashville Predators. Nashville comes in 13-3-1. The Sharks sitting at 9-6-3. We got a few minutes left, and Matt, something we were talking about off air that I wanted to bring on air. The Warriors are selling this, what they're calling a building pass. It costs $100 a month, and what it does is it gets you in the building for every Warriors home game. So you have this pass on your phone, at least that's how the A's do it. It's just on your phone. They scan it. They let you in. There's usually a special entrance you have to go in.
Yep.
And then the caveat is you can sit in the, like, you know, the club and bar areas every arena has?
Right.
You can sit in those. You don't get a seat. You don't get standing room only. You're basically in the arena at a bar inside the arena watching on TV. Which, for $100 a month, so you figure that's what, six games, seven games a month at home? Is that about right?
Sounds about right.
Five to seven? To be in the door at a loud arena, that seems like fun to me. If you're in the area and you can get down there for relatively cheap, and you can just get in the door and hang out with a bunch of Warriors fans, or a bunch of just any fans of a team.
Yeah.
That sounds like a good time to me. And there's a lot of people just panning it as a total ripoff.
So I understand both sides. I don't consider it to be a ripoff. I tend to lean more on your side of it's a smart decision by an organization that has taken full advantage of, one, their market, and two, their talent, to where they've raised ticket prices through the roof. They recognize they've priced out fans, but they're entitled to do so because a bunch of people are going to pay top dollar to see
still
probably
out.
The greatest team of all time
take
the floor on a nightly basis. So for fans that normally are not able to afford tickets, this gives them a viable option. This is ground that was really trailblazed by the A's organization, trying new things in baseball with their A's All Access Pass, and now we're seeing it for the first time in basketball. However, it also does, this is now me applying my own emotions to it, it also feels like a little bit of a slap in the face of to your fan base of, well, you guys can't afford to sit and watch the game, but you can afford to, we'll let you in the building. So I can understand how someone could take it that way. I personally wouldn't. But I personally also, regardless of how good the Warriors are, I would not spend $100 a month just to get into a building if I want a seat.
Right. So here's where, if you're just a diehard basketball fan and you're like, I want to be in the building, then this is a great deal.
Yeah. I mean, it's essentially a high-end sports bar experience surrounded by your fellow fans.
It's a cover charge, basically, to get in. Yeah. So the issue is I doubt that includes playoffs. And
I'm sure it doesn't include parking either. So you're paying for parking also to essentially not watch the game.
So I guess, like I said, I also see where you're coming from in terms of why not let it be standing room? Why not section off like an area that people can go stand in? I don't get this notion of like, oh, you can't, because there are unused seats. I know they sell out, but they definitely have unused seats.
And maybe this is a test for they're going to try something with the future arena that maybe there's a little more space. I mean, I've seen at least floor plans for there, and you talk about like the, for example, the Golden One Center. If they were to essentially sell a pass that allows you to stand up on the bar at the concourse and just watch the game, a lot of people will buy the tippy top seat tickets and they'll just stand up there at the bar and they enjoy it. They have a great time and it works. So, again, it makes sense from a business decision. What I question is the subscription part of it. Like, paying monthly to continue to do that, I might like to do that maybe as a one-time payment, drop $25 to try it one time and see if I like it. But to commit to a subscription of going to an arena 41 times to just sit in a bar and hear the crowd and be around the people, it doesn't sound enticing to me as a consumer.
Sure.
But again, like I said earlier, it does a good job getting people in the building that normally can't afford to or wouldn't go.
Yeah, like I said, I think it might just be a bad idea for some people, but I don't think it's necessarily a ripoff.
No, I don't think it's a ripoff at all. I mean, if it's your cup of tea, you're not being forced to buy it, you're getting an experience.
Did you see the Markel Fultz free throw last night?
I feel so bad for him.
Free throw thing that he did.
I feel so bad for him. He has the basketball version of the yips in baseball, and it's just this mental barrier that the poor guy can't get over, and people are making the joke of, oh, the Philadelphia 76ers ruined Markel Fultz or broke Markel Fultz, because remember how freaking amazing he was in college. There's a reason why he was the number one overall pick, consensus number one overall pick. But this guy, it's just a mental barrier that he can't get over. And my wife, she developed in college, she was a softball catcher, and she developed the yips where she couldn't throw it back to the pitcher.
Yeah.
But in moments where she had to gun down a runner stealing second, she was able to do it because she wasn't thinking about it.
Right.
When Markel Fultz steps to the free throw line, it's all him thinking. And this is just something that I know it's embarrassing for him. I know it's completely draining for him because I've dealt with it in a very much smaller scale.
Sure.
But with millions of people watching you and criticizing you, being the number one overall pick, the expectations with that, to have this mental barrier that you can't get over must be just exhausting and draining, and I feel nothing but sympathy for him.
It's just so odd. He was, and I know I'm not breaking news here, but I really hope that someday we get a full like investigative documentary on this because he went from number one overall pick, and like you said, pretty much consensus, except for the Celtics, who traded out of the number one spot because apparently they saw something. But
they saw right,
yeah. He can't shoot threes.
No.
He just can't. He's an ineffective player all of a sudden because he for, forgot how to shoot.
It's just all mental. And it's something where,
so
like,
so weird.
The pressure of the NBA is just a whole nother, just a whole nother beast that we don't even consider as fans. Because we just, you're a high paid athlete. You're paid millions of dollars.
Right.
Do your job. You should win game. You're the number one overall pick. You should be God on the basketball floor. This is a 19, 20, 21 year old kid who has been working his entire life to get to this point. And he has gotten to this point, and there is a niche that has him stuck that he is trying to work through, all the while thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people are mocking him, questioning him, wondering if he was a bust. It's just, I can't even imagine what he goes through on a daily basis.
On the other side of that, this is what you sign up for as an NBA player. You
absolutely
open yourself to that scrutiny.
Absolutely.
You just hope that at some point he figures it out and puts his jump shot back together.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to watch. I have not seen, aside from his triple-double last year, I have never seen a Markelle Fultz clip that's like, hey, look at this cool thing Markelle Fultz did. It's always, hey, look at this awful jump shot by Markelle Fultz, or look at this awful free throw by Markelle Fultz. It's just wild. And I know we talk about it here and there, but I feel like it can't get talked about enough because of how strange this is with his injury and with his coach. Just a very odd situation there in Philadelphia. Hey, Fleetwood Mac tickets, we're giving them away right now at 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. Third caller gets to see Fleetwood Mac at the Golden One Center on November 23rd. Get more info at khtk.com. All KHTK giveaways are powered by RosevilleAutomall.com. Nice little holiday gift there. On the day after Thanksgiving, you can go see Fleetwood Mac. Third caller right now can snag that pair of tickets. Now, the 49ers lose. The Kings win. Now the Kings get a couple days off. Don't know what the heck we're going to talk about in the meantime. But want to thank Matt Barrows of The Athletic, Danny Kelly of The Ringer. Want to thank Eunice behind the scenes running the cameras, doing everything she does on a daily basis. She does a wonderful job. Matt George running the board, chatting with me, being the Kings optimist and resident Kings expert.
We're beating the Warriors. Dethroned. The Kings are going to be the Kings again. Yes! Brilliant! I'm going home.
Yeah, me too. With that, we're going to end this show. For Carmichael Dave, who's out today, but hopefully back tomorrow. For Matt George, for Eunice and Matt Barrows and Danny Kelly, I'm Kyle Madsen. This has been The Drive on Sports 1140. Jim Rome is next. It's KHTK.